Connection Podcast Network. Welcome to, I guess, the premiere. I hate premiering. It's another podcast. It's just really me talking. It's JT. I run the ship along with Chad Campbell and Aaron George. And since it is Thanksgiving week, pretty much starting off, I guess tomorrow is officially kickoff of starting Thanksgiving week. One of the best weeks of the year. One of my favorite weeks of the year. But I do just want to put out there a thank you to everyone that has, you know, downloads all of our shows, has subscribed to the feed, leaves comments and feedback. We all really appreciate it. I know it's really been kind of a re-energizing for a lot of folks here on the feed. Nothing but love to Place Nation and the wrestling feed there, but I feel like it's really opened up opportunity on that feed, as well as just given us here a good repurposing. And so, I just want to say thanks to everyone who checks us out, who listens and enjoys the shows, and hopefully everyone has a great Thanksgiving week here in the U.S. and, of course, around the world, that everyone's continuing to have a healthy rest of the year with everything going on. So I figured we had an open Saturday, and I was trying to think of something different to do, and I couldn't really come up with a topic. I'm not as adept at the solo stuff as my comrades, Chad and Aaron. Aaron is excellent at it. Chad, passable at best. But I was trying to think of something different to do that we don't have on the feed here already. And I do love all the content here. But I thought something different could be a mailbag. So on our brand newly rechristened Place to Be Facebook group page, if you're not there, just go to facebook.com/groups/PTB live chats and you can request access or just hit me up on social and I can get you added. I'm at JT the Pod Guy on Twitter. So I put up a post earlier today and got a bunch of questions. I don't know if I'll get through all of them. My goal, my plan, if you will be to get maybe 15, 20 minutes in. We'll see how far I get. I'll save the rest for the next time. May this be monthly if it goes well. If you guys like it, if you like me. We start off with a hard one, which I don't appreciate, but Mark Claire is in first. Of course, he is the co-host of Second Print Comics right here on the North-South Connection Podcast Network. You hear that every Sunday, him and Remso talking comics. It's a really cool listen, whether you're a new comics fan, one that's fallen back into comics, or just a diehard. It's a cool talk radio-style show where they dive deep into a topic every week, like clockwork, every Sunday morning at 11. Second Print Comics hits the feed. So Mark says, if you could book 1 year of WWE starting in January 2021, who is your Royal Rumble winner and what's your Mania main event? Feel free to expand from there as much as time and excitement allows. So I can tell you, Mark, my excitement's at a zero. And that's not really WWE's fault, even though I'd say it's a good love-hate relationship we have going on right now. I've been in a weird spot with them for a bit. The one thing keeping me really into the product was taken away from me in 2020, and that was going to events live with friends and family and members of the nation, and also watching special events as a group. So in 2020 alone, I was supposed to go to WrestleMania, supposed to go to SummerSlam, was supposed to go to Double or Nothing in Vegas, and all that got crushed. And I haven't really even been able to have, you know, the friends and the crew here. We did get together for the Rumble right before everything hit. That was fun. But since then, too, so it's a bit harder. I mean, some of that's been replicated because we've done some group watch stuff within the fam here. But all that said, it's definitely taken a toll on my watching and following of the product. I'll pretty much watch the pay-per-views, but I'm not super dialed in. However, one thing I can tell you is that Roman Reigns has been awesome in the heel role we've always wanted for him. He's killing it as the head of the table and slowly bringing his family together with Paul Heyman. So I think he's going to be involved in the Mania event as world champion on some level, for sure. I think, you know, we've been saying it for years. To me, the easiest money on the table right now would be for Big E to dominate the Rumble to win there and then face Reigns and take the belt at Mania. That's where I would head. The interesting thing with Mania will be, you know, other fans. The Rumble's unlikely to have fans, maybe some, but Mania is the big question. The latest rumor now is, could they push it further into April to better the chance that fans are in the building? It's got to be in Florida. Florida is the most likely spot to allow fans. We see at their football games, the Dolphins and Buccaneers have fans now. So if you're outdoors in Tampa's football stadium, I don't see why they couldn't have 30% fans. I mean, that's what the Bucs pretty much have. So I do think there'll be some level of fans in the arena on that for that show. So with that said, I think you go with a good match, a big match, and I think it's Big E. You know, where does Drew McIntyre factor into this? Do they do a chase with him back with Orton? I don't see Orton making it to Mania as champion, so something could change there. And then, you know, I let Big E run with it. We know he has the personality. He's got a great look. I mean, he took what was meant to just be a faction to kill time, you know, 5 years ago and turned it into arguably, if not, you know, one of the top three greatest tag teams of all time, if not number one. Has some legendary matches with the Usos, some great stuff at the Wyatts, you know, so like it, there's been really good matches and feuds that New Day was part of. And I like the amicable split they did. So if they do run the Big E world title run, they can bring the New Day back together to celebrate. We saw how well that worked with Kofi. It was a great moment at Mania 2 years ago. So I think that's just my pick. I think he's a guy that deserves it. I think they're late to the party with him. I don't see why they wouldn't run with him, though. And I'm sure there's others on the radar that I'm just not thinking of because, again, I'm not super dialed in. But it would be cool if some fans are able to be in the building, if protocols are met, and see Big E Langston finally win the world title and defeat Roman Reigns. So I'll think some more on it. Maybe if I do another one of these, I can give a little bit more look at NXT. You know, Keith Lee is a guy I think that has a lot of potential. I'm not sure where they stand with him directly. Maybe is he someone that could fight Drew McIntyre at Mania? And where are the returning stars? If there's fans in the building, do we see The Rock? You know, that's a guy that's been rumored to have a comeback match. Is Brock Lesnar back? Is Becky Lynch, you know, is she back? I forget her exact due date and timeline. I think it's in December. So I don't know how that lines up. I know there was a rumor at one time that they expected her back for Mania. Is Ronda Rousey in the picture? So there's a lot of big questions that'll be answered. And I'm guessing a lot of it hinges on, you know, if they're able to bring fans in and draw fans, because why are you going to pay big money to Brock Lesnar, to Ronda Rousey or others if you're not going to draw at the gate? I mean, you know, if it's just gonna be a network special and empty fans, I just stick with what you got and then blow out SummerSlam. You know, like there's other ways to go about it than spend big money for not being able to get the money, the investment back. So I guess that'll really, you know, kind of steer the direction of Mania, but good stuff as Mark, from Mark, as always. Eric Eels, my good friend Eric. What will be your Christmas watch list? Have you already started? I'm assuming this is a TV movie list and not a gift list. Knowing Eric, I'm sure that's the direction we're going. So we watched Home Alone recently, and Home Alone 2, because my kids had never seen it, so we introduced that to them. They loved Home Alone 2, but I'll tell you, Home Alone 2... And we had a poll up in the Place to Be Facebook group, which is better. And Home Alone 1 won. But 2, you know, had a lot of comments because it's probably better than you remember. But as my buddy Charles put in there, it's also more sadistic than you may remember. It's vicious. It's borderline snuff film. Like that beatdown that he gives Marv and Harry in the house that his uncle owns is nasty. It's, I mean, he beats the shit out of those guys. So that's a rough one, but it's a great movie. Both Home Alones are great. Christmas Vacation, absolute must, of course. My daughter was having a hard time falling asleep the other night, and I introduced her. I was just looking for a random Christmas movie to put on, and I found Christmas Story on demand. So we got through like the first 20 minutes of that. So that's a must. Usually I'll wait and watch that because it's on, you know, 24 straight hours, and my usual play on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day is just put it on and in every room and just wherever it is, I keep catching it and fall asleep to it Christmas Eve. So that's a big one for sure. Elf, always a must watch. I may introduce him to the Charlie Brown ones. Honestly, we hadn't watched those yet before. You know, they've seen some of the Rudolph and stuff like that. I'm not as into those as some folks are, but there's definitely a lot of great Christmas movies out there. Those would be the big ones that really pop to mind. I can't say I have a, you know, family movie night with all the Hallmark movies. That's not my thing, but there are obviously some classics out there. And again, I'm probably missing some right off the top of my head, but Christmas Vacation would be my number one for sure, along with Home Alone and Just Friends, another great Christmas movie that gets overlooked with Ryan Reynolds and Amy Smart. So it's a fantastic movie, one of my faves. I'd watch that one year round. Ryan Gray, we had a battle in Madden the other night in our online Madden league, plagued by technical difficulties, but I still beat him down. He gave me an FMK, fuck, marry, kill. It's a tough one. Dave Meltzer, Wade Keller, and Mike Johnson. It's a little rough, Ryan. I'm not a big sheet guy either way. Like, you know, there's a lot of vitriol out there for some of these dudes. You may hear some of it on other shows, on these feeds. I don't care as much either way about it. Like, I think, you know, Dave Meltzer knows his shit. I'm not someone who thinks he's, like, out to lunch, but do I think sometimes he goes, you know, probably a little touch too far online? Yeah, I think he probably pull back the rhetoric a bit. That said, I'm Mike Johnson. I think I'd marry Mike Johnson. I'm friends with him on Facebook. We have some mutual friends. Seems like a nice guy. Seems like he cares a lot. Maybe too much. So I think he'd make a good husband. I think he'd really care and look out for our family and do the best he could. So I'm going to marry Mike. I guess I'd bang Dave. You know, he'd probably tell me a lot of news while it was going on. So that'd be fun. Give me some insider stories. And I don't know Wade as well. So, you know, sorry, Wade. I'll see you. All right, we can move along here. Jay Henchy, do you think the term burial gets around too much when superstars from NXT do you feel have been handled the best since moving to Raw and SmackDown? I've never been a fan of the buried term per se, especially in modern day WWE. And my big issue with that is they've taken away the ability to organically get over, right, with the way they've handled the last, you know, the last guy we've really seen organically get over truly was Daniel Bryan. And there's been some others here and there, but they rarely run with it. And one of their benefits in their mind, I'm sure, is because of the way they run their shop. You can kind of heat up or cool down guys at any time. Honestly, you can do they can take a guy and you can quote unquote bury him and have him lose and then have him win 3 matches in a row and win the world title. And I'm not saying it's a good way to go about business because I just don't think, I think the problem is people don't care as much, right? So what they've effectively done is murdered interest in the fan base that exists solely out of loyalty to wrestling and the business and the product and just kind of goes along with the flow, right? So I think there's less care or concern when stuff like this comes up. So buried, I guess, is a relative term. Do I think they don't use, I think the guys that don't use rights and girls that they don't use rights, I think we've seen a litany of those come up and down over the last couple of years. You know, stuff that gets over in NXT. And some of that has to do with the stage, right? Like, think back to Adam Rose or even Bayley, where in the world of NXT is so much smaller and insular and simple that they could tell these stories in a way that gets over with those crowds. They don't have to explain it to a large audience. Well, they didn't have to anyway. So they could kind of explain Emma's dancing or Bayley's hugging or Adam Rose's partying on that level. And when they come up to the big stage, it just doesn't click as well because they don't take the time to reintroduce. They do this weird thing where they almost act like NXT is its own universe, but then they assume that everyone's watching it, which if you look at the numbers, probably is not the case. So you can't just come up and assume everyone knows why Adam Rose has an Easter Bunny with him or why Bayley likes to hug people. And what we've seen is the characters that end up enduring on the main stage are ones that end up getting a bit of a reboot. Like Bayley has connected more through this, you know, heel Karen thing that she's got going on more than she did in her current role in or in her past role in NXT. When she came up with that, which worked and connected, but it just wasn't the same. They didn't take advantage of the built-in fan base they had with her and, you know, with young fans as a role model. So I do think, you know, there's a piece of that that really hurts things as well. So, yeah, I mean, buried, I don't think anyone gets buried. I just think they just get misused. So I think Keith Lee was used fine when he first came up, I guess. Again, I'm not as super dialed in, so I can't say if it's continued. It's interesting to me that Undisputed Era hasn't come up yet. That seems like a ready-made package, even though I know the size of the guys doesn't really scream like Vince is going to super push them. But when you have a dominant heel stable like that, I'm surprised. And a guy like Adam Cole, they haven't really utilized them yet on the main roster. Matt Souza, is a hot dog a sandwich? No, it's, I don't know. Maybe. it's meat on a bun, so I guess it could be. It's a stupid question, Susan. Honestly, I don't care. Scott Shiflett, how would you recast a new version? Right, so this one gave me Ajava. I did read this one in advance. He said, how would you recast a new version of 90210? The show is set in the 90s, but it's a reboot. And he clarified for me, just different 90s actors. And I immediately got a headache from Scott Shiflett's question. And I wasn't really sure how to, how to go about this. So I started to think it through, and I wanted to decide, was I going to fully recast the show or just recast some? Because, I mean, there's some that seem unrecastable to me. Like, you're not going to do better than Luke Perry for Dylan McKay. In my mind, you're not going to beat Jason Priestley for Brandon Walsh. Now, I know others may disagree, but to me, Brandon Walsh is Brandon Walsh. You're not gonna take Kelly Taylor from me with Jenny Garth, my it girl. So it's tough. Like, I mean, could Rob Lowe have been Dylan McKay? Probably. He probably would have been good in that role. Michael J. Fox is David Silver. I don't know. Maybe if David goes a different direction. I think he was probably too big of a star by then. Emilio Estevez was kind of brooding. Like, he could have maybe been in there. Matt Dillon as Steve Sanders was one I had in mind. Like, I think that could have maybe worked. I think an easy one you could look at is Alyssa Milano. Definitely, I think could have just fit in that role. I mean, she wasn't like super far off on Who's the Boss. I mean, Kirk Cameron's standing there, but he's not going to do 90210. It's against his beliefs. You know, looking at him. God, I don't know. Elizabeth Shue, she was headed to Melrose, right? Melrose? I don't know. Anyway, Jennifer Grey's flown out there. John Cusack. I mean, these are all stars that were kind of big. It's a weird era because 90210 kicks off in 1990, and I feel like there's a gap there. There's like 80s stars, but then there's like 90s stars, but they're all kind of too young. Like, you think of all the Saved by the Bell crew, Alicia Silverstone. Like, you know, like, could she have been Valerie? Maybe. I don't know. Tiffany Amber Thiessen's perfect. I just I don't want to shit on Andrea because she's going to take Dodie to court and do the SAG thing with everything going on there. So it's like, I don't want to shit on her, but I mean, outside of her, I guess she, you can't take Tori Spelling out unless you're going to give Aaron Spelling a stroke. So I would say Donna and Andrea, probably the most recastable. I think the rest is tough, and probably David. I like my Michael J. Fox as David, but he's going to dominate the screen. I think Matt Dillon is Steve Sanders. But again, I'm not ready to part with Ian Ziering either. And you're not touching the Walshes. I mean, they're perfect, right? They're perfect. So I tried, Scott. I mean, the only other one in my mind is only because he's hot right now with Cobra Kai would be Billy Zabka, Johnny Lawrence. I think he could have also been Steve Sanders, or if not, at least a frat guy that pops up in the college years. I think he would have been good. And then if you're casting him, you might as well put Ralph Macchio in there. He could have been David Silver, kind of an annoying nerd. But I don't think he gets cool because he's still fucking annoying in Cobra Kai. So, like, I don't think, you know, David kind of gets cool later, especially after he bangs Nikki in the limo. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's the casting is too good for me to mess with. I think Andrea is the only one. And honestly, I would just eliminate the character. I wouldn't even recast it. Could you still bring Jesse Vasquez in? Sure. But I mean, Andrea, I think the show would live without her being on there. The only time she's interesting really is when she's banging the male nurse and having the affair on poor Jesse. And all Jesse did was save, you know, Brandon's presidency at the college. So I tried, Scott. I did. I wanted to. I just couldn't. Michael DeDamos. Compare and contrast WrestleMania 4 and Survivor Series 98. Both had 14-man tournaments. One's a very enjoyable watch. The other is like a lengthy dental surgery. Is the one-night tournament a viable concept? Yes, it is. The problem is this is not always done well. WrestleMania 4 is interesting. I position that WrestleMania 4's biggest issue is that they did a bunch of other shit on top of the tournament. And that's what makes it long, not the tournament itself. If you actually lop off some of the other stuff, the tournament progresses fine. It's like the Battle Royal is cool. And then, but then you got, Warrior Hercules, like that can go. You got the tag team title match, which is fine, but honestly, in my contention, when Scott Criscolo and I think D'Amato was on that one, obviously, with us on the Place to Be podcast, you know, that gets lost in the shuffle. It's match 15 of 16. It's the longest match, second longest match on the show at 12 minutes, but it's forgotten. I mean, Demolition winning is a great moment, but it's like it's almost buried in the night. And that's why I'm okay with them not giving Brutus Beefcake the title on this night, because that would have been equally as buried. That was match 12. And they were going to have him win at SummerSlam anyway. So, and then you get the Islanders thing, which, again, I'm not saying these guys don't deserve to be on the show. But if you want to do the full 14-man tournament, like, this is stuff that didn't need to be in the way. So what you could do is bulk up that Battle Royal, take out some of the bums, stick the Islanders and the Bulldogs in there, and Bobby. Have Bobby be in the Battle Royal, and the Bulldogs are chasing after him. Put Beefcake and Honky in there. And then if you want to do the tag title rematch, that's fine. Or tag title change, I should say. Warrior Herc, you know, that doesn't need to exist at all. So if you take out four matches, you're down to 12. You know, you're chopping off, you know, at least 40 minutes, probably a time all in. So I think there's ways to go about it. There's a bunch of other bullshit too. You know, you got the fucking Robin Leach and the belt and all that stuff. So beyond that, if we look at Survivor Series 98, I mean, look, the work rate, you're not going to find it. But it's an amazingly booked show. Watched it last week as part of the group watch on that Facebook group page. And it holds up. Like, it is Russo crash style perfection. I mean, the booking, the way they weave everything through, The Rock coming in as a mega face and then going mega heel by the end of the night. Mick Foley in the tux as a down piece. But yeah, again, there's, you know, 14 matches on that card all together. And, you know, you got Sable and Jackie, 3 minutes, fine. You got the tag title match, 10 minutes. You didn't really need that. But the rest, they kind of learned, because the rest was all tournament. So there's definitely less stuff here to work with. And this was a much more loaded show when you look at the stars. Again, you could argue maybe it worked because of the style, because the matches were shorter. So can you do a 14 or 16-man tournament in one night? Probably tough. But I think some of the King of the Rings have proven, if you have good booking and the right talent, you can do a one-night, 8-man tournament and make it really good. I don't know how often they did that. I mean, 93, maybe. You look at 90, or, you know, 2000, had great guys in the tournament and the ass-backwards booking. Some of the best years they did were only four guys, 98, 96, 01. But I think if you look at the roster today, you are telling me you couldn't do an 8- or 16-man tournament to capture the imagination and keep people invested, because it's all going to come down to the level of quality. Now, you could do a two-night deal, like they do with the European tournament, or the, you know, Cruiserweight Classic is a little bit more spread out. But, or, you know, do a two-night deal where you do round one on one night and then the rest on another night. Like, I think that could work, especially in the network era, where who cares? So why not do a Saturday-Sunday tournament, King of the Ring? Like, that would work to me. But I still think you could pull off an 8-man in one night without a problem. You look at the talent. Look at the guys you got. There's no reason they couldn't load it up and just have a stellar work rate tournament and compete. So yeah, I do think it's doable. I think it is. It could happen again, and it should happen again, honestly. The booking has been what always gets in the way. All right. I'm just trying to look through. I want to save some of these for the future. We're already at 23 minutes. I'm just going to do a couple more. I'll save the rest for next month. Ryan Everett, how did you grow up to be a Yankees and Jets fan? Living in Rhode Island, I expect you to be a Boston fan. Yeah, I am not. So my dad was a lifelong Yankee fan. I think it's an Italian thing. He grew up in Rhode Island, but, you know, DiMaggio, of course, big Italian American cult hero. My grandfather on my mom's side, would have been my dad's father-in-law, also a diehard Yankee fan. So I was pretty much pushed that way. I went to Yankee games as young as seven at Yankee Stadium. So just always been super into it. The Jets is more curious and more annoying. So my dad was also a Giants fan. I don't remember being a super Giants fan. Like, Yankees, I remember. Like, every game was on the radio, right? Baseball was a thing. I mean, my dad still plays softball. So I played baseball, started a young age. I mean, baseball dominated us. I don't remember my dad watching a ton of football. Like, I remember the 1990 Super Bowl, like Giants-Bills, and having a party. But my parents had a Super Bowl party every year. So, like, I don't remember standing out that they were, like, my dad was, like, you know, flying high after a Giants win. But, like, now he's, like, a big Giants fan. So he must have been. But I don't know why they didn't push it on me. All I remember is my mom in, like, 1994 or 93, boy, whatever, that was a stupid fucking fake spike. She brought home a Jets starter jacket. She got on sale, a discount. No wonder it was on sale, of course. But it was sharp. It was the old logo. It was green and black. Starter was in. I had a couple starter jackets. I had a Lions later and a Redskins later. They're like windbreakers. But the Jets one was like a legit, like the bulky starter jacket. So I was all in. I'm like, well, I got the jacket. And they weren't bad in 93, 94. I mean, they were fine. And then the fake spike happened. And that was my first heartbreaking moment. And they were never the same. They went on to fire Pete Carroll, which, of course, in retrospect, likely a mistake. Hire Rich Kotite. Sign Neil O'Donnell to big money. That was a fucking disaster. But then Parcells comes in. And, you know, it turns things around. And I'll be honest, the 2000s, as a Jets fan, weren't bad. Everyone looks back like there's some longtime laughing stock. And yes, they have not won a Super Bowl, but they were competitive more than not in the 2000s. Like, they made the playoffs with Parcells. They were good under Al Groh. Herm was, they had a good run under Herm. Like, he was a good coach. They did a nice job. Should have won the playoff game in 05 against the Steelers. Mangini, like, I think he was building something. And then they forced Favre on to kick him out. Rex had a couple good years. You know, and even then, like, even Todd, like, they haven't had a playoff run in a while. They should have made it in 15. Now it's a fucking disaster. And that leads me into one more I'm going to do here. Tyler Kelly, another fuck, marry, kill. Adam Gase, Chavo Guerrero, and Frenchie Martin. Adam Gase, the worst hire. I think I lived through Kotai. I think this is worse. Kotai, they were at least in games. Gase is terrible. The only reason I think they're keeping him is likely just because they know it's awful and they're trying to get the number one pick, I guess. I hate Chavo Guerrero. I do. But I do like his early work. Like, pre-04, him and I are cool. Like, I liked him in WCW quite a bit. I don't mind him in the early Cruiserweight stuff and Los Guerreros. It's really after that where he gets super annoying to me. In that 06, 07. And the way he got lumped in with... He just wasn't a great worker anymore at that point, and they can't get lumped in that way. Him dominating as ECW champ, I could take or leave. I don't know. I mean, look, Frenchie, I don't even want to touch. So, I mean... yeah, I'd probably kill Frenchie if he's not dead already. Adam Gase, I'd probably fuck, I guess. Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, Chavo seems the most serviceable. I'd probably marry Chavo. Gase, I would just, you know, fucking it would be like that one good season he had in Miami, you know, so like one good thing before he shits out. So whatever. Ed Bennett wants to know why I haven't seen more movies. We'll touch on that one next time, I guess. Brian Meyer, Frenchie Martin, your thoughts. Okay, last one. Frenchie Martin, my thoughts. I just don't get it. Like he's completely useless. Like, I need my manager to do something. And this is one of my issues of Fuji. Some of the time too, like, he just looks like he's not really there. Like his head, like, he doesn't, like, he looks lost, you know? And I feel like with Fuji, a lot of what Fuji made Fuji work was Gorilla Monsoon, just telling us how devious he was. But you'd at least get the salt and the cane in there. Frenchie, he's most famous for getting his face punched in by Ronnie Garvin. Like, what else did this fucking guy do? He didn't even help Dino Bravo with the weightlifting record. That was all Jesse. Jesse did the two pinkies of pressure, not Frenchie Martin. Dino Bravo did nothing with Frenchie. And he didn't do much else with Jimmy Hart, but he at least started to elevate his career a little bit and hooked up with Earthquake and did something. And then Frenchie goes on to leave and come back and have one of the worst Madison Square Garden matches I've ever seen against Coco Beware. And it's not Coco's fault, because Coco's awesome. And that was March of 1990. So I just don't get it. Like, I don't see what he brings to the table at all, besides a stupid monocle. And the USA is not okay. Which, you know, it's hard to disagree with them sometimes. I'll do one more question, but really quickly, there's some other cool stuff at the North-South Connection. A lot of content coming at you every day. I mentioned Second Print on Sunday. Monday, every other week, you get The Year That Was with Aaron George. And honestly, it's one of my favorite podcasts. It's a must listen to me. Aaron spent 3 years watching every WWE pay-per-view event, every pay-per-view year. And then he took those and did a whole bunch of science and math. And calculated worst to best each year in WWE history based on pay-per-views alone. Now, I'm a little biased. I played a role in some of that. We ranked the WrestleManias and the SummerSlams and the importances. So we went through some of that stuff that plays a role in the calculations. But what he does is every other week, he's working from worst to best. So he recently did 2014, which is a great listen because it's an interesting year, the way he went about it. Talking about, you know, the heights of Daniel Bryan to the lows later. So that's a great list. And on Tuesdays, Aaron's back with Jenny and I doing TNA Never Dies. And that is another shit show. So we're going to the NWA TNA pay-per-view starting in June of 02. And it's a wild ride. Honestly, Aaron's a fucked up dude. And he just throws a bunch of questions at me and Jenny. Other than that, it's one of my other favorite podcasts. And that's Jake Williams and the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. He has a different guest every other week going through the Ruthless Aggressive era. And there's so much cool stuff in that era. Because it's this mishmash of like them trying to bring in this new young guys like, John Cena's going to be debuting, Batista, Randy Orton. But it's still like low-key loaded with stars. Like you still have Triple H, Steve Austin, Ric Flair, Undertaker, like all the guys you think of. And the crowds are still super dynamic. It's like in 02, I think we were thinking like, oh, the peak is gone. But looking back, like everything is super hot still, and it's still really engaging. And he's embarking on one of the most impressive stretches, which is King of the Ring to SummerSlam, which is a sneaky hot time in WWE history. So I recommend that. Thursdays, you get Wrestling Warzone, myself and Chad going through the Monday Night Wars. We're into the summer of 96, and big things obviously happened during that time frame. That alternates every other week with Extreme Three-Way Dance. I've loved doing that podcast with Jenny and D'Amato because it was just stuff I hadn't ever really sat and watched. I'd seen the highlights of ECW, but man, 95 ECW is amazing. It's life-altering, and we are closing in on the end of it. And I've heard 96 is just as good to start, so I'm super excited to continue that show. Fridays is our pop culture day. You either get the Gang Gets a Podcast, myself, Josh, Richard, and Aaron, going chronologically through It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, a show I discovered late, but I've binged them all, going through it a second time on the show. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it and listen along. That rotates with Shrink Wrapped, our comics podcast, looking at the psychology of superheroes, and Rank and File, a really good bracket-based show led by Jordan Duncan. Saturdays, you get No Holds Barred, myself and Aaron, doing a bunch of nonsense, lists, live watches, and then maybe these. Last question, I promised you one more, for listening to that, and here you go. Justin Pratt, if you can only watch a three-year stretch of wrestling, all promotions from that time, what 3 years would it be? Pratt, I feel like this is a podcast concept you've started like 19 times or at least talked about, or a written series you've talked about, and I feel like you're using my answer here to try and get you over that hump to kick it off. All right, nostalgia-wise, if we talk pure nostalgia, like, I'm just settling in and I want comfort food and nothing else. I'm going 96 to 98. I've seen that stretch a million times. I have all the Raws on tape, you know, talked about it a million times. I'm loving reliving it with Chad. And if you throw an ECW in and WCW, like that's great years for those three. So, I mean, that's probably my choice. Second would probably be 89 to 91. Because 89 NWA WCW is amazing. WWF 89 is so damn good with the Mega Power shit and the fallout from that. And I just love 91. So, I mean, those are probably my two choices. It's hard for me. I don't know enough about foreign stuff in the indies, like in the 2000s, to sit here and say, oh, you know, a later year. If I had to maybe say one, like maybe 05 or, yeah, I don't know. Like, what's TNA's best peak, right? It's pre-Bischoff and Hogan coming in, so maybe 06 to 08, something like that. Do they have a shaky in 08, though? Do we? This is tough. 05 duty is not bad. TNA's good in there, too. And then you get Ring of Honor. If you're talking, like, everything, right? You get, like, Punk and Joe and all that stuff. So that's probably in the mix, that time period. But, I mean, I think 96, 98. You know, you could argue 2002, like, if you just really want. That because you get the invasion, you get the dying days of WCW, but you get the Attitude Era, and you get 2000 during its best creative year, plus you get the launch of Ring of Honor, and if you get into 02. So it's a good topic. Like, I like that. I'm going to put that as a question of the day. That's something else we got going on that group page, is a question of the day. Maybe we can see what others think. So, look, I hope you enjoyed this. It's been a quick 35 minutes for me. I've enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy everything in Otsuka Connection, and hopefully you enjoy your Thanksgiving week as well. Again, JT the Pod Guy on Twitter, reach out and I'll do a post on that group page probably once a month if I bang these out. I'm going to try and keep up with it. I had a great time talking. Hopefully you all enjoyed it and we'll talk soon. Thanks for the feedback. Keep it coming. Later. Love is sweet when hearts like ours made.